had somehow snuck into her heart when she hadn't been looking. Perfection, Paula said, and Kennedy noticed that Fee was going in for her first bite of the tasting. Not that she was actually putting the forkful in her mouth, but she sniffed it and licked a bit of the filling. So this is a part of the new, how do you say it again? Paula asked sweetly. Melange. Melange line, Kennedy said, speaking slowly and phonetically. Meylang line? Paula said sweetly. Kennedy was about to say close enough when Paula elbowed Fee. Meylang? Fee repeated, not an ounce of sweet to her voice. There hadn't been any sweetness to her since she'd come back yesterday, stating that while she would never walk off the job, her coming back didn't mean she was in support of the current management. Even though Paula pointed out several times that Kennedy wasn't the new manager, but the new owner. That Fee was willing not only to try, but also to sell the new multi-fruit pies was enough for now. No, the E is accented, so it sounds like an A. Melange. Kennedy extended a hand as if she were one of those models on those infomercials. Would you like to sample our new apple melange pies? One hand on her meaty hip, Paula mimicked Kennedy and said, Would you like to sample one of our apple melange pies? Close enough, Kennedy said brightly, moving on to the next part of the day's lesson. If people ask what's in them, remember that melange means medley. I really listened to what you were saying, Paula, about easing people into new things. It took everything she had not to glance at the person who needed the most easing. And I came up with the idea of making Washington apples the star in every bite, while using other fruits to elevate and showcase each type of apple's unique attributes. That is a lovely idea. Inventive, fresh, and very considerate of the town and Sweetie Pie's traditions. Paula turned her attention to the town's tradition police. Don't you think so, Fee? Fee's face puckered like she'd eaten a spoonful of the lemon honey. Why don't you just call them apple medley pies, then, if they're made from a medley of fruit? Good question. Kennedy clasped her hands, excited to explain her reasoning. She worked so hard to come up with pies that pleased her customers and her bottom line, while remaining true to Sweetie Pies and what Kennedy had set out to accomplish. I thought it was important to use the word apple, since that will resonate best with the locals. And melange? Well, it adds that little je ne sais quoi that appeals to dessert connoisseurs. And people willing to spend $20+ on a pie. Connoisseurs! Fee sent Paula a strange look. We have any connoisseurs here in town? Saul, down at the Gas and Go, eats pie for dinner, Paula offered, being helpful. And we sell lots of pies in the morning. I was thinking of customers outside of Destiny Bay. A little bubble of excitement jumped in her belly. I was actually thinking of customers outside of the Pacific Northwest. I did some research last night on shops that sell their pies on the internet. Did you know people right here in Washington State pay upwards of $38 for an authentic Georgia peach pie? Think about what people would be willing to pay for an authentic Washington apple and cranberry pie, or one of your famous humdingers. Paula clasped her hands beneath her chin. More than $12. The bell dinged, signaling they had a customer. While you two talk about feeding the world, I'm going to go feed the people right here in Destiny Bay who don't need a fancy name to know good pie, because Sweetie Pies has all the je ne sais quoi it needs. Fee said, pointing to the 16 gold tins lining the shop window. Grabbing her apron, the older woman pushed through the kitchen door and headed out front. Paula took Kennedy's hand and gave it an apologetic squeeze. Don't you worry about her. Your medley pies are delicious. People are going to love them. And once Fee realizes just how hard you are working to please everyone, she'll come around. She was already tasting your pies this morning, and that was a big jump. She just needs a smidge more time, Kennedy sighed. I know. Afternoon, Bitsy, Fee's voice carried through the window.
What can I get you?
Kennedy let out a sigh of relief. Maybe Paula was right, and Fee was coming around. She might not be sweet on Kennedy at the moment, but at least she was still working hard to please customers.
Frank asked if I could come pick up his order for tonight's Bible study class, Bitsy said. He needed to do God's work today, so I offered to do his.
Frank was the pastor of Destiny Bay Presbyterian Church, and Bitsy was his wife. Every Monday and Thursday, they had a standing order for 10 pies, and if Fee did her job, maybe a few of those would be replaced with apple melange pies. Kennedy poked her head out of the pass-through window.
Hey, Bitsy, I got the pastor's order right here. Give me a minute to box them up for you.
Kennedy gave Fee a parting look, then smiled as if to say, please. Fee smiled back. At least Kennedy thought it was a smile. The older woman's teeth were showing.
While she's boxing your pies, might I interest you in something new?
Fee said, and Paula had a silent clap of excitement.
Today, we're introducing the first 3 pies in our new Ménage à Trois collection.
Her French suddenly impeccable. Paula choked. Kennedy stopped breathing, and Fee went right on smiling. Bitsy cleared her throat and in the most devout voice asked,
Pardon me, but I don't think I heard you correctly. Manage a what?
Ménage à trois, dear.
Again, with perfect pronunciation.
3 kinds of pies, 3 kinds of fruit, all living together in the same flaky crust. It's just sinful. Deliciously sinful.
Good Lord, Bitsy said, lifting the cross pendant on her necklace and kissing it as if asking for divine intervention.
Kennedy needed divine intervention too, but asking for a blessing on her pies seemed a bit frivolous with so much going on in the world. So Kennedy decided that if anyone was going to sell the merits of these pies, it would have to be its creator. Kennedy pulled the last batch of Sweetie Pie's traditional apple deep dish out of the oven and slid in a batch of her apple and red currant pies. Her new pies had been gaining fans every day, but today was going to be big. She could feel it. The library had special ordered 10 apple and huckleberry pies to go with tonight's book club theme. She was meeting Cosmo at 7 to finalize the contract, and Kennedy had been so busy in the kitchen, she'd barely had time to notice it was Thursday. Too bad that didn't apply to Luke, or the fact that he hadn't called. She'd considered calling him to see if everything was all right, then figured if anything had gone wrong, Paula would have said something. Then she thought about calling to say hi, only she figured that if he'd wanted to talk while he was away on business, he would have called her. And when all of that figuring led to a headache, she focused on what was important. Her own business. She could pretend she wasn't somewhat hurt, but she'd promised herself that she would never pretend again. Not when it meant missing important facts, like what happened between them 6 nights ago didn't mean that their relationship was anything more than temporary. But the way he'd held her, as if he didn't want to let go, how her heart melted every time she thought of the tender way he'd looked at her, how he made her feel as if she was something to be treasured. Someone who was worthy of love. Kennedy knew. This thing with Luke might not last forever, but in her heart, she wanted it to. A dangerous want to have for a girl who didn't know what forever even looked like. Paula hobbled into the back room, her hair in disarray and her breathing heavy.
There is a mob of people out front.
Do they have picket signs or pitchforks? Kennedy asked, wiping her hands on her apron.
Do bingo cards count?
Paula asked, and Kennedy set down her rag and walked to the kitchen door. She cracked it open, just enough to peer into the shop unseen, and a comforting warmth filled her chest. Cards covered every inch of table space, and one of those hand-cranked bingo machines sat in the front corner of the shop, which was filled with people. Not people, customers, talking and laughing and eating. Which made them paying customers. Some of them predated the Constitution, but all of them had gray halos,
including the woman in the lavender sweater set and pearls who was turning the handle and shuffling the bingo balls.
Is that Bitsy Evans?
Kennedy whispered to Paula.
I think so.
Once Bitsy had left the shop the other day, it didn't take long for word to spread that Kennedy was selling sin in a tin. Representatives from every female organization in town showed up to see how they went about getting their hands on the triple threat pies, as they were calling them. Pies that satisfied your craving, your Washington pride, and, well, put the sweet back in sweet spot. Bitsy claimed she was there to stop any sinning from going down, but she ordered two pies to go. Kennedy explained there wasn't the equivalent to Viagra for ladies crushed up in the crust, and after a series of disappointed grumbles and a single hallelujah from Bitsy, she asked the women to stay. She served coffee and tea and pie all around, and when everyone was done tasting, she shared a piece of herself. Told the women about her grandmother, her recipe journal, and why she loved baking. In return, they each shared stories about their own lives and passions. By the end, Kennedy had felt a closer kinship with the town and its residents. She felt as if she was one step closer to calling Destiny Bay her home, and these women her people. As the women were getting ready to head home, Kennedy asked them what they'd like to see in their hometown pie shop. Not only were they fans of her medley pies, a name a pastor's wife could get behind when recommending a great place for pie, but they were also interested in smaller pastry items. It seemed Destiny Bay had a diner, but not a place where friends could meet and share a sweet bite, coffee, and the daily gossip. Kennedy said she'd provide the coffee and sweets if they could help her bring in the people. Cautiously optimistic, she'd hoped, but didn't put much weight in it, for fear of disappointment. But they had come through. Not for Paula or Fee, or the promise of free pie. They'd come through for her. And as incredibly foreign as that felt, it also felt comforting.
What are they doing?
Playing bingo, Paula said with a smile. And they're buying pie. Lots of pie. And not all of it just apple, Kennedy noticed. Her part-time help was behind the counter, slicing an apple and Bing cherry pie into sixths. Cool and under control, Lauren slipped each slice onto a plate.
How can I help?
Kennedy asked, stepping in beside her.
I need a hot herbal, 2 hot tea lattes, 5 coffees, 1 black, 1 with cream, the rest the works.
Lauren stacked the plates on the tray and hoisted it up on her shoulder, surprising the hell out of Kennedy.
What? On the weekends I tend bar by campus. A bunch of old ladies got nothing on drunk frat boys and a mechanical bull.
Only because we don't have a mechanical bowl. Kennedy grabbed 8 mugs and the coffee pot, then started pouring.
I thought you only wanted to work a few hours a week.
You don't have an espresso machine either. You should get one. It will attract the younger crowd, since they have to drive to the next town for a Starbucks, she said. And I'd love to work more, but Paula and Fee only had a few hours when they hired me on.
Kennedy paused and gave her sometimes baker, sometimes cashier in the boys are fun but sorority sisters are forever t-shirt a second look.
I thought you were a marketing major.
Lauren smiled.
Double major, marketing and restaurant management.
Lauren smiled as if she was overlooked a lot, then delivered the pies, not even missing a beat when Louise Ferndale moved her walker in the middle of the walkway and right in Lauren's way.
She's a go-getter, Paula said, coming up beside Kennedy and bumping her with her hip.
Reminds me of someone else I know. With a grin, Kennedy went to fill the mugs, enjoying the loud hum of the room.
Did they all come in at once?
Yep, started ordering pies and coffee by the table, Paula said. Once the pastor's wife assured me they were betting with coupons and not cash, I figured they were paying customers and started slicing. But when they kept coming, I came and got you.
B-16, Bitsy said into the mic. B-16.
I got B-16,
Margaret Collins hollered, waving a personalized bingo stamp in the air.
Well, I got B-16 on 2 of my cards,
the woman next to Margaret said, and Kennedy's eyes tracked to the voice. Then she blinked. Twice. White bun, black biker's jacket, coral lipstick. "Is that Fee?" Kennedy whispered. "Was the second one through the door. She ordered a slice of traditional apple, but she paid for it." Paula sent Kennedy a sideways smile. "You know what this means." "That Fee is starting to come around?" Paula snorted and waved a dismissive hand. "That you're popular." Somehow, overnight, this became the spot. And if it's the spot for the bingo team, then it could become the spot for a lot of other organizations in town. "It could even become the breakfast spot," Kennedy said, knowing that smaller items like muffins and pastries had a low cost and high margin. It was as if, here in Destiny Bay, the possibilities were endless. Kennedy still wasn't sure if she believed in destiny, but she couldn't help thinking that this was what coming home felt like. At least, that's what her heart said. Chapter 15. At exactly 7:03, Kennedy locked up her shop and stepped out into the crisp autumn night. A cool breeze filled her lungs and sent leaves from the nearby maple trees fluttering down the brick sidewalks, painting Main Street in a fire-colored snowfall. Kennedy listened to them crunch under her boots as she crossed the street, feeling a deep sense of pride when she saw the banner advertising the Gold Tin Apple Pie Competition. Fee and Paula had made the humdinger a national champ, and Kennedy was going to make it a household name. Smoothing her hair, Kennedy tugged her skirt down and pushed through the massive wooden door of the penalty box, not looking for its co-owner, not thinking about him, and not stopping until she reached her awaiting party in the back. Tonight was about her business, her success. Holding up two unmistakable red boxes, she smiled. "I brought pie." Cosmo, hat already hanging on the hook over the booth, stood.
"Miss Sinclair,"
he said in greeting, gesturing for her to take a seat, which she did. He was dressed in a soft gray suit with a yellow bow tie and suspenders. His hat was a straw boat hat, and he was drinking a cold cider. Kennedy had always wanted to meet with a dashing silver fox who did business deals in back booths of bars. "This is a mix of pies." She set one box on the table and then the other. "And I even saved you a humdinger. Just don't tell anyone, since we technically sold out before lunch." Kennedy smiled at that news, selling out in such a short amount of time. But Cosmo shifted in his seat at the information.
"Would you like a drink?"
he asked, lifting his hands to wave over the bartender, which could or could not be Luke. Not wanting to see him right then, she said, "I'm fine." And in case he persisted, which a silver fox like Cosmo would, she added, "I'm too excited about our meeting to drink. Maybe after the contract is finalized, we can celebrate with something fun." Cosmo rested his hands on the table, his serious nature making something ping deep in Kennedy's chest. She knew the feeling well, but refused to acknowledge it, even when Cosmo released a sigh that always preceded bad news. Kennedy had had enough bad news in her life to know the signs. But this was Destiny Bay, a town swimming in possibilities, so his look of discomfort must be brought on by heartburn.
"As soon as I received your signed contract, I sent it straight away to my legal team," Cosmo said,
and Kennedy sat up straighter. "Your legal team," she beamed. It sounded so professional and final.
"There were some concerns about advertising the pies as a Gold Tin winner," he said.
"Oh," Kennedy said, knowing that was a real concern with a simple answer. "I can assure you that Fee has licensed the exclusive rights to use her pie recipes, but Paula agreed to sell me the exact apple varieties they used when creating the pies. It is the same pie you and everyone here in Destiny Bay fell in love with."
"But you're not Fee,"
Cosmo said, and Kennedy laughed. "Nope, just Kennedy Sinclair, newest owner of Sweetie Pies."
"And that's where the concern comes,"
Cosmo said softly.
In order to sell your pies at the price point we agreed upon, they need that extra something, which is where the title came in. But you have never personally made one of the gold tin winners, so unless Fee agrees to bake the pies every day, legal is concerned that we can't truthfully say that they are the same gold tin winning pies.
But the humdinger is entered in the contest, she said. So, by next week, it will be my pie. Cosmo seemed relieved by this.
I didn't know you had entered. If you win, that solves everything.
Kennedy felt the same relief and almost told him she'd take that drink now, when he added,
When I saw the humdinger entered under Fee's name, I assumed she was going it alone again.
Kennedy swallowed. Fee usually enters on her own? I thought she entered for the shop. It was the whole reason Kennedy didn't enter. She didn't want to put up one of her pies against their biggest seller. No sense in competing with yourself. Cosmo shook his head.
No, Fee has always entered on her own. Does she have the rights still to enter that pie since you bought the recipe?
Kennedy grimaced. I actually bought the commercial rights to all of the recipes, so Fee can't sell the pies, but she can make them for her family and personal use.
Since she's not selling the pie, but entering it in a hometown competition, she isn't in breach of contract,
Cosmo said. But if she entered it before, then how was legal going to handle it if she'd ever agreed?
It was her pie and her shop, so it didn't matter. But if she is no longer part owner of the shop, then Sweetie Pies technically won't be the winner, and this contract would be between Klein Fine Foods and Sweetie Pies.
Which means you couldn't claim the title even if she wins.
I am afraid not,
Cosmo said, and Kennedy felt those words hit her squarely in her chest.
And the only way my team would feel comfortable moving forward is if the contract is made with the actual title holder, which would be Fee.
A contract, they both knew, would never happen. Luke was as adept at reading nonverbal cues as he was at knowing when a company was out of options. It was what made him such an effective corporate developer. And this deal was out of options, no question about it. Even though it wasn't his deal, Luke felt the same burning frustration in his chest that followed a devastating loss. But this time, it was accompanied by guilt and a tractor trailer full of shame. Not that his deal was out of the woods, not by a long shot. In fact, the look of devastation on Kennedy's face said that his option pool had doubled. But the expected rush that came with knowing the last piece had fallen into place never came. Luke wanted this deal with Rogers to pan out, needed to buy back Bayview Orchards for his mom, but getting it like this didn't feel right. Because everything in Kennedy's world was going incredibly wrong. And even though she had more than enough reasons to give up, she held strong, even comforting Cosmo as he delivered the fatal blow. She wasn't pointing blame, demanding to know what happened. She just nodded compassionately, understandingly, and gave Cosmo a hug goodbye, then waited until she was alone in the booth to absorb the hit, like she'd been expecting it all along. And why not? He'd told her exactly what would happen. Was pretty sure his offhand remark had been part of the force that took her down. Only, it hadn't been offhand, which he could maybe forgive. Luke had made a strategic play that was fueled by emotion when he'd opened his mouth. He was hurt that Kennedy hadn't said a word about Cosmo, especially after he'd opened up to her that morning. He was also determined to prove to Hawk that he wasn't going to let him down. So he said the one thing that would give Cosmo pause, force him to reconsider. Now Kennedy, who had moments ago looked ready for the biggest moment of her professional life, was staring at the table, looking so damn tired and small. He knew he should turn back around and walk away. The last person she'd want to see was him. Not to mention, Huck was going over the offer Walter had given them, which was too pricey to make sense, and Luke needed to focus. Not that he doubted Hawk would offer up the money, but it was a bad deal all around. And the one thing Walter had been right about was that there was a lot riding on how the next few weeks played out, for everyone involved. The smart thing would be to keep his mind on the goal and eyes off the composed way Kennedy held herself, even though he knew she was falling apart inside. Which was why Luke found himself walking toward the table, ready to absorb her anger and find a way to fix everything. Because that's what good guys did. And Kennedy deserved to see that side of him as much as anyone else in his life. "Hey there," he said softly, sliding into the booth next to her. "You look like you could use a drink." She glanced his way, and the second those baby blues locked on his, all the drama about apples, Bayview Orchards, and the deal with Rogers faded into the background until there was just the two of them, and the reality of what he'd done to her. "I finished Cosmo Cider." She touched the rim of the empty glass. "I'm good." She was so far from good, it broke his heart. "How about a friend, then?" "Are you my friend?" she asked. He didn't know what they were, and friends didn't seem the right word, but it was a safe place to start. "I'd like to be." His words seemed to hit a sore spot. Probably the one that had just been ripped open when he sold her out to Cosmo. He wouldn't be surprised if she told him to fuck off, and wasn't that a damn shame? Kennedy was one of the most giving people he'd ever met, but people always just seemed to take from her, including him. She studied him, long and thorough, as if looking for something that could make her change her mind. And God, he hoped she found it, because he didn't want to just be her friend. He wanted to be the one guy who didn't let her down, leaving her stranded and alone in the middle of the shitstorm he'd brought on. With a sad smile, she whispered, "I missed you this week," then rested her head on his shoulder and cuddled close. That was it. No yelling, no blame, just 5 sweet words and a gesture that changed everything. He had every protective instinct rearing up to save her from the disappointments of the world, including him. It was clear that she had not a clue as to his role in her current situation, and, as Luke slid his arm around her, that he'd missed the hell out of her too. Which left him with 2 options. Fix this mess, or she'd lose her shop, and he'd lose a friend.
"I thought about calling," he admitted. "But once I landed in Chicago, things didn't go as expected, and well..."
He stopped, mid-bitch, because when had he become an excuse guy?
"I should have called. To say I had a great time last weekend, which I did, then to apologize for disappearing."
"That's okay. Life happens." She gave a little shrug, then pulled the sleeves of her sweater over her hands. "It was kind of crazy here, too, as you saw." She nodded at the empty glass. "Cosmo wanted to sell sweetie pies in his supermarkets."
"Truth time."
Luke tilted her face until she was looking up at him.
"Cosmo told me the other night. Said he was excited about the possibility of working with you."
"Oh." Her gaze dropped to her lap. "Well, the excitement was short-lived."
"I was surprised when he told me, because I had just seen you that morning."
"I know. I'm sorry," she said, as if he shouldn't be on his knees begging her for forgiveness. "I didn't tell anyone. I thought if I did, it would make it real, and then if it fell through, it would hurt so much more." She looked up, and the tears lining her lashes made his chest constrict until it burned. "It doesn't, though, make it worse. I don't think it could hurt worse than this. I was so close, and everything just fell apart." She shrugged and sat back. And Luke wanted to pull her into his lap, tell her he'd fix everything and she didn't have to worry. But she straightened and cleared her throat. "Your mom and Aunt Fee found out," she added. "I guess I'll have to explain that Cosmo wants to work with the gold tin winner, and that although he loves the pies, he needs a winner to command the higher price point." Luke wanted to punch himself, because what she was really saying was that she wasn't a winner,
that Cosmo didn't need her, because on her own, she wasn't enough.
I am so sorry, Kennedy.
Luke tucked a stray hair behind her ear. All Kennedy wanted was to start over, share her recipes and a piece of herself with people, and make a life here in Destiny Bay. And he had complicated that for her.
Is there anything I can do to help?
Not unless you know of someone who wants to give up their spot in the competition to an outsider, she said to the floor. He heard a little sniffle and shit. She was crying. And Luke found himself in a place he'd promised himself never to be again, standing between two things he cared for and having to choose. Last time, it was between his family and his freedom, and he'd chosen wrong. Maybe this was his chance to get it right. Walter hadn't refused their offer. He'd just countered it with a ridiculous one. So Luke still had options. Kennedy had none. And how he chose to move forward from here would determine the kind of man he truly was. He looked at Kennedy, really looked at her, and that ache in his chest, the one that started the day his dad died and expanded when he lost the house, disappeared the moment those baby blue eyes locked with his. He knew the kind of man he wanted to be.
I can do you one better.
He fished his cell out of his pocket and scrolled through his contacts, found who he was looking for, and hit call.
What are you doing?
She asked. He held up a finger while it rang. Then the phone picked up.
Hey, Sally. This is Luke Callahan from Two Bad Apples. Sorry to call so late, but I was wondering if you could make room for one more entrant. She is the new owner of Sweetie Pies and new to the area.
He listened to Sally on the other end, then said,
That's great. I owe you.
He disconnected and pocketed his phone.
Who is that?
Kennedy asked, and the cautious hope he saw swimming in her expression tugged something deep down.
Sally Miller is the gold tin coordinator and a good friend of my mom's, he said. Her husband owns a sports bar in Tacoma and was Two Bad Apples' first customer.
There went the misty eyes he was trying so hard to avoid.
You didn't have to do that.
I wanted to. And she said that even though the entry period has passed, she could make room for one more, especially a local.
Something about that last word had her sliding her arms around his neck and holding on. He held her back, and damn, it was the first time in a week that he'd felt whole. They sat just like that, holding each other in the back booth of a sports bar, with the game on the big screen and Johnny Cash coming through the speakers, for a good while.
Thank you,
she finally whispered.
Now all you have to do is win,
he said to lighten the mood, but it had the opposite effect. She sat back, her hands coming to cover her mouth, which was gaping open.
Oh my God, I have to win.
You've got this,
he said truthfully. She was an amazing baker, and if she played to her talents instead of trying to play to everyone else, she could win this thing, and he would never see those apples again. A problem he'd worry about later.
I have to win, Luke, with a recipe of my own, while going up against the 16-time champion.
16 times means she's comfortable, secure, he said, cupping her face. When people get comfortable, they make room for someone with the determination and drive to move right in.
How am I supposed to sneak past Fee Callahan? Kennedy asked. The woman has eyes in the back of her head. The second she sees me coming, she'll take me out at the knees with her rolling pin. She might be old as dirt, but she's got a good swing, fast and accurate.
People with talent don't sneak. They put it out there.
He took her hand.
Put yourself in that pie, Kennedy, and people will love it.
Thank you. I needed to hear that, she said,
especially when she's got access to the same apples as I do.
Lucky for you, I know this guy, and he's kind of a local expert on all the varieties of apples.
She flashed a smile that lit him up. Yeah?
Yeah.
He took her hand and threaded their fingers.
Heard he's a real badass, too.
sexy and charming. I could give him a call if you want.
I want. He could only hope that in the end, she was still saying the same thing. Chapter 16. Kennedy stood at the top of the bluff at Bayview Orchards, staring down at the crashing waves below. A chill blew off the rough waters, chapping her face and sending a little shiver over her skin. I can see clear across the bay to the little islands out there.
It's actually just a few rocks that the harbor seals use as a playground, Luke said, coming up behind her.
She could feel the heat of his body seep through her clothes. She turned her head to look at him, caught by the beauty of the dozens of acres of gently rolling orchards covered in a kaleidoscope of apples and bright green leaves. The scent of fresh-cut grass and ripened fruit permeated the sea air as gulls caught the wind in the early evening breeze.
On a clear day, you can see the whales off the coastline heading north.
While her gaze tracked, he slid an arm around her waist, effortlessly pulling her back to his front and warming her from the inside out. She'd been dying to touch him since he walked over to her table, like some kind of good guy for hire, looking charming and sexy in a pair of butt-loving jeans and a blue flannel.
Last one. Ready?
His other hand came around her, holding an apple. It was on the smaller side, light green and russeted around the stem. She shifted so she faced him.
Is that a pippin? Nope. And no more questions. It's against the rules.
He pulled a small knife out of his pocket and sliced off a sliver.
I want an unbiased tasting.
He held the piece against her lips, just like he had with the other varieties. Only when she took a bite, she let her lips graze his fingers, lingering long enough to let him know she liked his rules.
Wow,
she said, surprised by how firm the texture was, yet it was incredibly plump and juicy. He ran his thumb along her lower lip, catching the juice as it ran over, only to bring it to his mouth and suck.
So sweet.
Wait for it, he whispered. She didn't have to ask what it was, because as soon as the first note hit, it was followed by a tartness that was complex and sharp, and her taste buds came alive wanting more.
It has a piney aftertaste,
she said. And it's not a pippin?
Close. It's a pippin and a Honeycrisp. We call it a crispin,
he said, putting his knife in his pocket.
My dad spent 20 years crossbreeding different varieties to finally get this. He wanted an apple that was firm and kept well, but had several levels to it. Not just tart or sweet, but a complexity that would carry over through the fermenting process.
It's incredible. Luke smiled.
He would have loved to hear that. It's even more developed after a few weeks in storage. And when fermented?
Luke closed his eyes.
Incomparable.
It would make the perfect base for a pie, she said. But you already knew that. It's why you brought me here. He shrugged.
It needs some acid to cut through the sweet notes, but I hoped that it might be the something different you were looking for.
She went up on her toes and kissed him lightly, lingering long enough to taste all the levels that made up this man. He was firm, but sweet, and so much more. With her arms still around his neck, she pulled back. I like the sweet notes.
Me too.
His hands slid down to settle on the curve of her lower back. And I like that you brought me to your home. Kennedy couldn't put her finger on what happened, but something shifted ever so slightly. With a tired smile, he kissed her nose, then pointed over her shoulder.
Speaking of the house, it's over there.
She turned, and Kennedy's breath caught. It wasn't just a house. It was the centerpiece of the property. Perched beneath an oak tree with an aged tire swing sat a beautiful farmhouse with white clapboard siding, a bright blue door, and enough charm to be on the cover of a magazine. It wasn't big by any means, but it had amazing floor-to-ceiling windows that spanned the back of the house, looking out onto the orchard and distant waters. This place is enchanting. It was made for a family, she decided. A single story of history and memories held together by love and a wraparound porch. She felt him smile against her hair.
My mom used the same word, unless she was talking about the barn.
He pointed to a sad-looking bundle of boards and siding, which appeared to be some kind of faded red structure that was sagging with age.
That's a barn?
He chuckled.
It was my dad's distillery. He'd disappear in there for days at a time, tinkering with his cider, come out looking like a mad scientist or some kind of mountain man.
He looked down at her.
It drove my mom crazy, but she loved him.
Your family owns this place?
It was our summer home,
Luke said, a soft reverence to his voice that gave her pause.
And we spent nearly every weekend here. My mom stood right there, where that sunroom is now, and said she could happily spend the rest of eternity looking at the ocean and those trees. So my dad bought her the land as a wedding present and built the sunroom for their 10th wedding anniversary.
Sunroom was an understatement. The structure was more like a cathedral observatory with wrought iron encased leaded glass walls and ceiling. Inside was a green oasis of plants and ferns, surrounding a charming sitting area that was perfect for reading or whale watching on a clear day.
Now I know where you get your romantic side from.
She pressed back into him teasingly, and he tightened his arms. Did little Luke swing on that big tire over there?
All the time,
he said, like a boy retelling his greatest tale.
Until Hawk dared me to swing off the bluff and plunge into the ocean. Mom caught us and threatened to cut it down if she ever saw us doing that again. Then she made enough casseroles to last through winter.
Stress baking. It's a dangerous habit.
Well, tonight you won't be stress baking. You'll be baking up new recipes, right?
He sounded so concerned, as if the thought of her being stressed out brought him pain. No stress baking, she promised. After you taught me all of the different kinds of apples and let me taste them, I think I have an idea that will blow away the judge's taste buds and put me in the running. Thank you for that, by the way. He shrugged like it was no big deal, but to her, it had been everything. He'd taken the time to listen to her problem, then help her find a solution. Never once did he tell her what to do or how to feel, just let her experience what she needed, then took her to one of the most beautiful orchards in the state, where he hand-picked a dozen different apples, all heirloom and all holding so many possibilities, explaining the benefits and the drawbacks of using each one. Kennedy hadn't a clue as to how close baking and cider were when it came to acidity, sweetness, and overall balance. Luke's experience with the apples and his thoughtful suggestions sparked so many ideas. She couldn't wait to get in the kitchen and try them. But since every time she'd thanked him, he seemed to get uncomfortable, she decided to change the topic.
Is that why your mom sold the shop?
Because she wanted to move out here full time? She asked, figuring that if she owned this place, she'd retire tomorrow. Luke exhaled, then leaned back against a tree, pulling her with him until all she felt was him, a big, warm, protective man wrapping himself around her. It was a feeling she could get used to.
I think she sold the shop because her body is tired,
he said.
But she wouldn't think to come here, since we don't own it anymore.
She remembered the real estate sign at the top of the dirt road where they pulled in, and suddenly felt like she was trespassing. Then, whose apples were we eating?
By the end of the week, they'll be mine,
he said, looking over the endless view of apples.
Tomorrow, Hawk and I will accept the owner's offer and buy back the apples.
Luke didn't seem thrilled over the idea. In fact, he seemed a little overwhelmed. You don't sound happy. Luke let out a humorless laugh.
One of the owners won't piece out the harvest, so if we buy all 50 acres worth.
Kennedy had no idea how much 50 acres of heirlooms at wholesale would cost, but she knew it would have been a heck of a lot cheaper to buy her 3 acres. But instead of running her out of business, like he'd originally set out to do, Luke found a different path, one that allowed her a chance to live out her dream,
a realization that was as foreign as it was touching.
Why did your mom sell the property to start with?
She didn't.
Luke said so quietly, she barely heard it over the ocean breeze.
I did.
You sold it?
He laced their fingers and led her along the jagged bluff. Maybe she should have thought to change out of her skirt and big city shoes, she told herself, as she stumbled while navigating the rocky surface in sky-high heels.
Always the gentleman, Luke slowed his pace and wrapped her hand around his forearm for balance.
After my dad died, I discovered they were drowning in debt. A few bad harvests, followed by never-ending medical bills, my college tuition, grad school, and it all piled up.
Oh, Luke, she squeezed his hand. That must have been so hard.
I was off making a life for myself, so I had no clue about their debt.
The pain and guilt in his voice were hard to hear. Luke didn't just love his family. He felt responsible for them. It was as if he believed that it was his job to ensure their happiness and health. A steep job, even for one of the good guys.
I had the choice of selling off this place or leveraging Callahan Orchards, both of which would break my dad's heart. But I did what I thought was best at the time.
She could only imagine how hard choosing between giving his mom her dream home and saving his family's legacy could have been.
If I had just stayed, I would have seen the problems and could have stepped in and avoided this entire situation.
Kennedy looked at the property again, and instead of thinking about the romantic views and charming porch, she thought about what it must have looked like to a teenage Luke. It would have been daunting, confining, even paralyzing. You grew up knowing that this would all be yours, that Callahan Orchards and everything that came with it would fall to you. She squeezed his hand. You were born into a future that family responsibility dictated and planned. It left no room for possibility. That's a lot for anyone to take, especially a kid who had dreams of his own. And Luke would have had big dreams. It was the kind of person he was.
In the end, the only thing I wanted was more time with my dad. More time here.
As if he needed to distance himself from the memories, he started walking. This time, leading her through the orchard and toward the sunroom, her heart aching for the man who'd lost so much.
When I sold the property, I put in a first right of refusal clause, which means I have until the end of October to make a fair bid.
The only reason he would wait was if he was short on capital. Kennedy thought back to their talk in her bakery when he offered to buy her out. Then she remembered what Paula had said about Luke needing the apples to be happy, and that was when the severity of the situation hit her.
You needed my apples to buy this place. In a roundabout way, yeah.
He opened the ornate glass door, and sunlight-heated air soaked into her bones, warding off the last of the chill. The raised ceiling gave the illusion of being outside, while the lush green of the plants and a hint of citrus from the potted orange trees brought about serenity that went soul deep. The room was warm and cozy, made for playing games and watching the stars. It was the kind of place that encouraged memories and instilled their longevity. Luke led her to a chaise lounge in the center of the room, where he tucked a soft blanket tightly around her.
Better, he whispered.
Much, she said, moved by how naturally he cared for others. Thank you. With a nod, he turned, staring quietly out onto the bay.
Hawk and I signed a deal to be the exclusive hard cider supplier for a large chain of sports bars. The payment for our first delivery would give us enough money to put down on this property.
Luke, that's incredible. He glanced over his shoulder, and his smile said it was anything but.
We're short on cider.
Kennedy felt sick. Let me guess. 3 acres short? He didn't have to answer. His expression said it all. He wasn't trying to chase her out of town or even secure his own happiness. He was trying to secure his mom's, and that, more than anything, called out to her. Why did you help me tonight? She asked.
I wouldn't have been able to get in the contest myself, and I would have had to sell you the apples, which she'd bet would be half the price of what he was going to pay. I lost my mom's property because I was too busy playing big businessman. I don't want you to lose your shop because I wasn't smart enough to think my way out of a problem. She thought back to a moment ago, standing on the bluff, realizing how sweet he'd been for not standing in the way of her dream. What she hadn't known was that he'd put his own dream in jeopardy for hers. But what if you lose this house again because of me? I won't. He turned toward her and, squatting down to get at eye level with her, rested his hands on her knees. Even through the thickness of the blanket, she could feel his heat. And it's more than this house. I helped you because I don't want you to go. Kennedy swallowed through the emotion.
You don't want me to go?
No, sweetness. I don't.
Luke sat down next to her. Leaning back, he rested his arms on the curved back of the chaise, bringing him in close, so his thigh was flush with her bare legs and his arm pressed against her shoulder. She wasn't sure if it was the easy contact or the idea that he didn't want her to go, but the panicky feeling that set in after her talk with Cosmo was back. Not sharp enough to make every breath a struggle, but her chest tightened in a way that had her heart straining.
Why not? Me going would make your life easier.
But it would make everything else harder, he said.
So you want me to stay because you'd feel guilty if I left? Responsible for me losing my place? If that were the case, she'd rather know now. The last thing she wanted to be was one more person he felt responsible for. If he wanted her to stay, she didn't want it to be because of some superhero complex or doing the right thing. She wanted it to be because he saw the possibilities in them. In her.
I want you to stay because of this.
1 minute, his lips weren't anywhere near her mouth, and the next, they were caressing hers, languidly exploring one corner, then the other, and finally coaxing open the seam. When a moan that came from so far inside it might have been her toes, she opened her mouth to deepen the connection when something vibrated between them. This kiss was different. Sure, it was sexy and succulent, but it was also emotional and unexpectedly tender. All of the earlier lust and primal desperation that had driven them from the start was gone, replaced with an understanding that took her by surprise, and a gentleness that made her feel as though she was precious. Maybe it was the expected crash of an emotionally charged night, or the fact that she was sitting in the middle of Luke's childhood, kissing in the sunroom that he might end up losing because he chose to help her. But suddenly, she felt unsure. Nervous, like the scared girl whose mom had finally come to visit. But no matter how hard Kennedy tried, she would never be enough to stay, to keep, to love. Kennedy pulled back.
What is this, Luke?
This,
he said. And the only contact they had was his hands on her cheeks and the faintest pressure of their thighs brushing.
Is perfection.
He tilted her head to the side, and his lips brushed hers again. It was sweet and erotic and perfection indeed. A small burst of hope welled up, almost making her believe that maybe for him, she was perfect. Then that little voice in her head nagged that she was far from perfect. She focused on the sounds of the crashing waves, the gentle sway of the swing, and the fantasy that maybe she belonged here, in this family-ready home with this family-loving man. But she couldn't get past the word. Perfect was impossible. A fantasy. And she didn't want a fantasy. She wanted this to be real. Opening her eyes, she knew she wanted this to be the truth.
I don't need perfection, because I'll never be perfect, she said, as he kissed down her neck. I just need to know that I'm enough.
Luke lifted his head to meet her gaze, staring for what seemed like an eternity. With a single fingertip, he traced the lower curve of her lip.
You are more than most people will ever be.
I'm also more stubborn than most, she reminded him quietly.
I think stubborn is sexy. And when I said this, I meant you, sweetness. I want you to stay because you're simply you, he said.
And the conviction behind his words rocked her. Her breath caught, and her heart stopped to absorb the words, to analyze what he really meant. Only there was nothing to understand beyond the fact that she could easily fall in love with him. She was already in love with his family, his town, the way he made her feel, and she was one kiss from falling completely. Holding her gaze prisoner, Luke moved in slowly, sliding the blanket down her shoulder, her lap, to the floor, giving her time to back away. But Kennedy was tired of backing away, so she met him halfway, and when their mouths brushed, she knew. Knew she'd fallen a long time ago. The first time she'd seen him with his family, seen what a loyal and loving man he was, knew she'd give anything to have a chance at that kind of connection, to be on the receiving end of an unquestioning affection that left her breathless.
I want this too. And by this, I mean you.
She sank her hands into his hair and pulled him back with her, into her arms and into her heart.
Thank Christ,
he said, going up on one knee and moving her backward. She felt the arm of the lounge and, at his request, lay all the way back until his body was covering hers.
Because I've wanted you since I left your house last week.
All you had to do was call, she whispered against his lips.
I'm more of an in-person guy. The intimate nature of a face-to-face allows me to assess a person's unique wants and needs, he said, and she shivered from her lips to her toes.
She rested her hands above her head on the arm of the chaise and played coy. And what is it that you have assessed from me?
Oh, sweetness, you're an open book. I've been saying from day one that you want me to kiss you.
He ran his thumb over her lips and they quivered in response.
But what you need is a hot, wet kiss.
Right. His finger trailed down her neck, between the valley of her breasts, not stopping until it was running over her center.
Here.
With a needy sigh, Kennedy arched up into his hand, wanting more of that delicious pressure.
I don't imagine me being right this particular time is a bad thing.
To prove his point, he skimmed that sweet spot again, only this time he went under her skirt to find wet silk. Admitting something like that could give you a big head, she said. Maybe you should try it again and let me see. He pressed against her, proving how big his head had become.
That happened the second you walked in the room wearing these boots. Did I mention how much I like these boots?
She bit her lip and shook her head.
So much so that the rest of this is just window dressing.
The zipper of her skirt gave, and Luke slowly slid it down her legs and to the floor, leaving her in her blouse, boots, and silk. He lifted a brow.
Red.
These are my power panties, she admitted. I wear them when I need a little extra swing in my step.
It's helping with my swing,
he grinned, as his fingers wrapped around the ankle part of her boot, sliding it up the inside of the couch. Her knee bent and her leg parted farther with every inch gained until he hooked her knee over his shoulder.
And to be clear, I said you needed to be kissed, not touched.
Watching him watch her, Luke knocked her other leg to the ground, leaving her completely open for his viewing pleasure. His brow puckered and Kennedy reached for the blanket, but he stopped her hand. Then, one by one, he unfastened the buttons of her blouse, his knuckles brushing her breasts, her stomach, until he reached the last one. With a wicked smile that offered her a round-trip ticket to the promised land, he carefully parted the two halves of her blouse.
Power bra, she whispered.
Perfection.
Sliding down her body with delicious slowness, he took his time, his lips finally making contact when he placed a languid, open-mouthed kiss right above her belly button. Luke, she moaned, and could feel him smile against her belly. I believe that you said my need was a bit... She gasped as he nipped her hip. His gaze met hers through his thick lashes.
Your need is a bit what, sweetness?
Lower, she managed.
Here?
His tongue licked along the waistline of her panties, delving beneath the fabric to tease. Lower? Her eyes slid shut with anticipation.
That's right. I remember now.
Before she knew what was happening, his clever fingers had pulled her panties to the side, and Luke was kissing her exactly where she needed. No wonder he'd managed to rise to a corporate developer in just a few short years, she thought, as he drove her slowly out of her mind. The man was an expert at assessing needs, because before she could ask for more, he was giving everything. Using her one leg for stability, Kennedy pushed up into his mouth. Never one to pass up an opportunity to prove her wrong, he slid his hands beneath her, bracing her weight and lifting her higher and higher until she felt her body.